This is the State of Things broadcasting live from the Triad Stage in Greensboro. I'm Frank Stachow. Thank you. Tens of thousands of furniture buyers from around the world head to the Triad this weekend. The High Point Market returns this Saturday. The industry has been an economic boon for the Triad as it continues to keep up with changing trends. Millennials are opting for smaller furniture than previous generations, and baby boomers need less furniture as they downsize. We're joined by Dick Barron, who's a business reporter for the Greensboro News and Record. Dick, welcome back to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me today.
Take us back a little bit. What's the history of this High Point Market?
Well, you know, in the late 1800s, the industry began manufacturing here with cheap wood, a market for cheap furniture. And so the leaders of High Point realized that they were sort of the city in the middle of a lot of this. And they said, "What? You know, we have the space. We have some of the resources. Let's put a market together." So in 1909, they agreed to have the first market. It was a smaller affair. And then in 1921, it really took the jump. If you can imagine, they spent $1 million in 1921 dollars to build the Southern Furniture Exposition Building with 250,000 square feet.
So let's talk about what this show is. It's an exposition. It's not really a retail. It's not for retail buyers, right?
That's right. This is for people. This is for retail companies, people who market to consumers, and for the manufacturers who want to sell their goods to wholesalers and retailers. So it's, again, it's not for the average retail customer.
It's interesting because, as you said, this was quite intentional. I mean, there's a meeting that goes back to 1901 where some 35 representatives from furniture makers sit in with the mayor of High Point, right?
Yeah.
And they have a meeting
and
say, look, we should make this the center of this kind of exposition, again, in 1901.
Right? Yeah, and, you know, again, because the industry had begun and there was just such a fertile market for furniture, they decided, well, we've got the opportunity to do this. Let's just start build a building.
So what goes on at these markets?
Well, it's very interesting for those. A lot of us have not seen it, but these are huge buildings. The furniture is on exhibit not in the way you would think, but in almost the stagecraft. Carpenters build imitation living rooms, houses. You can go in and see how the furniture might be placed in a house. So this is a very elaborate process. People stroll or trudge down these long, long corridors in 3 million square foot buildings. And they go to places they think, if they're looking for couch furniture or
living room sets,
wooden things like that.
Well, so and the manufacturers are putting on the show, right?
Correct.
And early on, were these manufacturers mostly regional? Were they all from North Carolina, or was it a big national kind of exposition?
No, it was mostly regional. And after a while, but it was called the Southern Furniture Market. After a while, though, it began to get notice around the East Coast and then the country. But it began as a regional, North Carolina. Southern, Southeast. And these companies were, again, largely based here and maybe in South Carolina as well.
All right. So as the we reached the age of globalization, of course, the furniture market took a big hit the furniture manufacturing took a big hit in North Carolina. What happened to the market in those days?
Well, imports were becoming trade agreements, tariffs, and so on made imports a lot easier. And so a lot of manufacturers saw, as they did in textiles and everything you can think of, saw cheap labor in places like China, even Vietnam. And now we've reached the point where $21 billion of furniture is imported into the United States. And of course, those jobs disappeared in the Triad, in North Carolina, Southern Virginia. And so it was just like the textile industry. It was core industries for this area just imploded.
And of course, going back to the origins, not only was there timber in North Carolina, but there was a textile industry. So if you're making upholstery and making furniture, this became a really great place to make it and then market it.
Sure.
You talked about the reasons for the collapse of the industry. What was happening to the market at the time? Were people still coming to High Point, or in the age of globalization, did the market itself lose some of its luster?
Well, there were fewer buyers, and people began to trail off, partly because it became more expensive, or rather, retailers were not selling as much. Certainly in the 80s and 90s, it began to slow down, and so they were not spending as much time at the market, but they still came, and that's because of the tradition. And the market itself, High Point, began to do a better job of getting the word out and of doing things to make it more interesting and more attractive for the buyers to keep coming.
This sounds like an expensive thing not only to put on, but also just to be a part of. If you're a manufacturer now, I mean, it's not like being in the tech industry where you come with your laptop or your tablet and you put up a display. You got to ship your furniture to High Point and then take it all back.
And right? Then you've got to build a set. You know, yeah. You've got to have craftsmen, carpenters, designers, people who can actually put together, you know, these are people who might build a dramatic set, but they're building it for retailing or for wholesaling.
Are those workers mostly taken from the local workforce, or do they get brought over?
They're mostly local, and in fact, there was a Duke University study that said the market contributes $5 billion to a 30-county region, and 37,000 jobs. And so, again, a lot of these are temporary support jobs, catering, and that sort of thing. But there's no doubt about it that the carpentry, all that kind of work comes in and does its job during these periods of time.
And the people who put on the market have remained intentional. They do a lot of effort to market and change marketing strategies. The legislature approved $500,000 to help fund the market in the trade show, right?
Right. And there's a lot of marketing that's developed over the past, say, 10 years. Before that, the market was a hodgepodge of transportation. It was almost impossible to get in and out of High Point. I've had to cover it a few times, and that was the thing I dreaded the most.
You got in that News and Record helicopter, and they brought you in?
They brought me into the top of the building.
There you go.
Yeah. But no, school buses, city buses, you name it. Now they've hired a transportation company that runs regular shuttles between 100 hotels. And so they're not parking, 10 miles out. Well, they may still be, but they're getting easy transportation in.
We're talking about the history of the High Point furniture market today on The State of Things. Dick Barron is my guest from the Greensboro News and Record. He reports on the furniture business. These days, as you say, the infrastructure's gotten better, the marketing has gotten better, and there have been attempts by some very big cities to take this away, Las Vegas and Dallas, to name two.
Well, Dallas made a run. That was just not successful. I think the buyers did not want to go as far as Dallas to do their buying. Las Vegas, another thing altogether. Las Vegas, of course, is the convention city. I went on vacation out there not long after the furniture market challenge came from Las Vegas. They built a huge exposition building for nothing but the furniture market in Las Vegas. Wanted to take a run at High Point. So there was a real concern here. And again, the marketing became more intense here. Certainly can't compete with, Rod Stewart and that sort of thing, but they did try to bring entertainment in. I remember Hall & Oates came here, certainly a contemporary act here. They did a lot of that, and Vegas, again, became a real threat.
But it's no longer a threat because now the one company owns both markets.
That's right. About a few years ago, around 2011, I should say, a company bought 14 buildings in High Point, mm-hmm. and the Las Vegas market were consolidated. Now they're complementary rather than competitive because one company wants to do well with both.
I would think the other fear for manufacturers in going to Las Vegas to stage a show is, what happens in Las Vegas stays in Las Vegas. So they couldn't get their furniture back.
A lot
they
of
were,
furniture.
They were afraid
yeah.
that they'd lose
yeah.
it forever.
Yeah.
Taste have changed too, and that's kind of an interesting story.
Well, that is. And there was a recent report out just a week ago that said that the younger people called millennials, although I think they resist that name, and older people, the baby boomers, have completely changed the way they buy. You know, the baby boomers were the ones who fueled the market after 1945, or rather when they were setting up homes in the 60s. Now they are retiring. They're moving to smaller apartments, so they want smaller furniture. Also, the millennials are getting out of college. They are starting smaller homes. They don't have a lot of money, so they'll buy a smaller piece of furniture, two or three. And so the trick for the industry is to design furniture that can sell to these folks to fit their needs and their taste. One other thing, the flat screen TV. That has had a massive impact because you can now put that on the wall. You don't need a piece of furniture for it. And you can take up a smaller space. So you literally can have a smaller apartment if you have a flat screen TV.
That name, millennials, by the way, refers to how long it takes them to get out of college, I think.
That's part right. Of it. That's right. Or get a job.
They've been resisting that name for 1,000 years.
That's right.
My guest Dick, is a Greensboro News and Record business reporter, Dick Barron. Dick, thank you so much for being here with
us today
on The State of Things. Just ahead, healthcare students look to artwork for new ways to understand their work. And first, we'll hear from a Greensboro folk duo, Magpie Thief. We'll play for us in a second after I say you're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.
Kite